a very, very spicy one last night at Petco Park. Been talking about it all morning. We'll continue to talk about it all morning. That's what we do here on Ben and Woods. Thanks so much for being here. We are halfway home on a Tuesday, June 25th. And I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Benjamin R. Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. I was watching the Stanley Cup Game 7 last night, and it was incredible game. I kept it on until the Padres started, but they went to commercial, and there was my beloved Ben. A little promo for you. Did you see that?
Yeah, I've got the me standing in front of Petco Park.
You look so handsome.
You know, looking like I'm delivering some sort of sports cast.
But
in essence, they told me to stand there and just pretend like you're talking so they could get a good shot of me.
Yeah, it's great. Sports, with Ben Higgins. I'm like, I know that, dude. Look at you in the Stanley Cup Finals, man. Did you watch some of that game?
I did. I watched a ton of that game. It was
crazy.
I had multiple TVs going. I had the College World Series going on. I had a Tennessee crown champions for the first time ever. The Florida Panthers crown champions for the first time ever last night, winning the Stanley Cup in dramatic fashion. So it was a very busy night for me at work.
Yeah, it was a busy night at home, man. It's things are nuts right now. We've got camps for days and. It's just nuts. Like a summer Uber driver dad, you know, clinic after camp after clinic. It's always fun when you book them. You're like, that's going to be great. There's so many activities for them to do. And then you realize they're 6 and 3. They can't take themselves. So you actually have to go and then sit and be there in the scorching heat. You're like, this is, we didn't think this through. Really, like today, I'll get out of here. I got to go to SEALs camp and watch Bo and bring Bo home from SEALs camp. Then go to Frozen Ropes after that for practice.
Wow.
It's busy. It's a
long
day. Busy
day.
Little beaver. So dad summer Uber is in full effect.
Before we move on, I want to thank Bob Kendrick again for coming on and sharing some of his Willie Mays knowledge and stories with us. And I wanted to just say, because I saw someone pointed out in the chat, when I talked about kind of being surprised by Reggie Jackson's comments, obviously I've seen the Jackie Robinson movies. I know how ugly it was when the color line was broken in baseball and baseball was being integrated. I didn't expect to hear that story from Reggie Jackson, though. I consider Reggie Jackson like a ball player of my childhood,
right.
Like a totally different era. Like I know it wasn't perfect, but I didn't realize that even players in, like, as Bob said, the late 60s going into the 70s were facing such hatred.
Well, bro, it's 2024. Let's not act like that still.
It's not. I mean, you know, it's definitely. I mean, that's like stuff from like a movie, essentially, that the stories that Reggie Jackson told
nuts.
Were incredibly moving. And I thought important for people to hear, important for me to hear. Obviously, that reminds you that any progress that's made is always very slow and very difficult to get where we want to be.
It's one of my biggest regrets, that flat tire I got from Wichita, for multiple reasons. But the flat tire I got driving from Wichita to Kansas City on my way to the Negro League Museum, got a flat tire in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, and stuck, you know, for a few hours. On the side of the road, and I made it in time for the Padres-Royals game. Did not make it in time to go to the Negro League Museum. Had to turn around after the game and come straight back to Wichita to fly out the next day. One of my biggest regrets, man. I don't know when I'm going to get to Kansas again. You know, I have no idea. So I was really, really bummed to miss it. I was planning a good, solid 2 to 3 hour visit.
Also, question for Paulie. During that Bob Kendrick interview, was that like what it's like working with me, what Woods did to Bob multiple times, jumping in and trying to interrupt him and ask a question? Because
I thought he was done.
Yeah, that's what I do all the time. And
yeah.
I don't feel as awkward when I'm doing it, but when you're doing it, I was horrified.
Yeah, now you
know how it feels. Is that how it feels when I do
every
it?
Time. It doesn't change in... For me,
it's so much worse
when
it's so much worse when you're not the person doing it.
Yeah,
I didn't realize
that. I felt for the last 6 years.
Now I know.
Yes, it's terrible.
Like, I can put myself in your shoes and how horrifying it is.
Yeah, you know,
because I was embarrassed.
You get those guys. I mean, at least I didn't ask him about a heart attack he didn't have. You know what I mean? Like, that's right. But like,
what kind of moron would ever do
100%. So Bob, how's your heart attack? That wasn't me. It was the other guy. He has a cadence, and they stop, and you're like, is he done? the uncomfortable silence between questions is all. So you want to keep try to keep it moving. But
it's a lot different if they're in studio or even on Zoom.
Oh, yeah, I mistimed the cadence, and it happened. I was up till midnight, thanks to Jerks and Profar's heroics. Literally up till midnight, laying in bed going, I can't sleep. How am I supposed to sleep? Ambien didn't work. I'm just sitting. I fought through it. The Ambien, I went through it. And now...
How late do you go before you're just like, I'm just going in early?
I mean, you know me.
1 a.m. is my cutoff. Because I've had, like, not insomnia, but trouble falling asleep. I mean, if I'm laying in bed from, call it, 9 to, like, 11,
yeah.
I might switch it up. I might go lay on the couch, change the scenery. Maybe that helps. And if it's like 1 a.m., I'm like, I'm just pulling an all-nighter. I'm just going to go in.
Yeah, I've been here at like 2:30 in the morning before. I mean, it just happens. We have a weird house. You know, my wife gets up early to do whatever she does. And so I'm up early a lot, and I hate it. But last night, it was nothing other than just being extremely fired up. Now, I made the mistake of, after the walk-off, going on Twitter, X, whatever. That's the mistake. Because then I saw Jesse Winker in the stands essentially screaming at a fan. So that got me all fired up. Then I saw the Nationals, what they said at the end of the game. We still have that, Paulie. This is after they win the game. The Nationals broadcast, we're talking about it.
And I tell you what, Bob, the Nationals dugout is not thrilled with the way the Jerks and Profar celebrated that walk-off hit. He went right towards the Nationals dugout and started screaming at them. And Ildemaro Vargas, Jesse Winker, K-Bert Ruiz stood on the warning track as the Padres were celebrating that walk-off. Jerks and Profar not celebrating by looking at his teammates, instead screaming at the Nationals dugout for the intentional walk that loaded the bases, challenging him in that moment. So, some trauma.
Yeah, so I made the mistake of watching that. Well, then my blood pressure starts to rise, and I get that defensive mode of wanting to defend our guys and looking at trying to see it from their side of the fence, and I couldn't really see it because I had also watched the top of the 10th, and I watched C.J. Abrams all night. I watched Nick Senzel, you know, running around the bases screaming like he had just hit a walk-off in the World Series. Good for you. Big, big hit. Clutch knock, two out, home run. You got a three-run lead. Bro, I fully understood it.
And I'd imagine anytime C.J. Abrams comes back and does something against the Padres, it's going to feel extra good for him.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you face your former organization and have a big game, and he was on fire yesterday. He's been playing real well this year.
So that's what screwed me. I need to know I need to remember. We walk it off, just put the phone down and go to bed and try to go to sleep then or put a movie on or something. But I sat up there stewing all night till about midnight.
Sit on sleep mode.
I was gassed. I know. I couldn't do it, man. I'm an addict. It happens. You know, you do what you do. But I was all charged up. Couldn't wait to get here this morning after a win like that. But, yeah, man, the interesting thing is, and we'll see if anything spills over into today. You know, a good night's sleep is always good for everyone. I mean, if you have an argument with your wife or your, you know, partner, whatever, your teammate, give it 24 hours, see what happens, right? I don't think Jesse Winker is going to be as pissy today at 6:40. I don't think Mackenzie Gore or Davey Martinez or K-Bert Ruiz or any of the guys that he just mentioned. I don't think Jerkson Profar is going to be as fired up today at 6:40 as he was last night. Right? Like, 24 hours can do a lot.
And now, as we said, we didn't think Jerkson Profar really looked like he was directing much of the Nationals dugout. Now, he admitted
he felt disrespected.
He felt disrespected by the walk.
Which is fine.
Which fires him up.
Yeah,
I mean, he takes that as motivation and uses that. That's great. But I didn't get the sense that he was, like, legitimately mad at the Washington Nationals. He was probably secretly pretty happy that he got that opportunity.
Yeah.
He's 4-for-4 with the bases loaded this year, by the way.
Yeah.
And they'd all be extra base hits if he had bothered to touch second base last night as well, which he didn't. So it ended up being a walk-off single instead of a double.
You know, and again, you're talking about two teams that are pretty much neck and neck right now. San Diego Padres certainly cannot afford another guy to get injured, right? I mean, wouldn't it be our luck for something to happen? Somebody goes out and pulls a hammy or something, you know, in a fight. But I will say this, man, like, if they have any issue with that celebration, that's pretty tired. That's pretty tired if they do. You know, that's a huge, huge moment in a huge situation. Again, the pitch up and in to Jerkson Profar knocked him down. To come through in that at bat was pretty clutch. I don't want to see anybody hurt, certainly. But I certainly don't want to roll over again for another team. If they got a, if they have a, you know, problem today and they want to go out and dot one of our players, I certainly hope that we retaliate and handle business. But, you know, I don't want to see us do anything, you know, to start.
And the other reason why last night's game was so important is that you don't feel as confident about today's matchup with Adam Mazur. You know, I was last week ready for him to go back and get some more work in the minor leagues.
You
and
were
ready for Yu Darvish to come back.
You were ready for him to go do DoorDash for a living.
And now
you really were.
And now he's back to make a fifth start today against Mackenzie Gore, who's been solid for the Nationals all year. This is a tough matchup for the Padres. They'll need guys to come through again. They'll need some offense in this game. I don't anticipate Adam Mazur going and tossing seven innings of shutout ball today. It's just unrealistic based on what we've seen so far. So you lose that one. Now you're putting yourself in position to lose the series. Now you have a chance to steal today's game, and you can go for a sweep tomorrow in the homestand finale.
Yeah, I mean, look, tonight's going to be a tall order. It really is. And when Patrick Corbin, you know, holds you to five hits and Derek Law, I feel like Derek Law has been pitching since I was in high school. When he came out last night, I went, this guy's still around. I had no idea. He's just one of those guys that's been hanging around forever. He's only 33 years old. I looked it up because I thought, this man's 46 years old. I feel like I'd seen him forever. When those guys sit down 19 in a row on you, holy cow, man. Like, that needs to be addressed. That needs to be talked about. They certainly don't get a pass for that. Three runs cannot be where you take your foot off the gas against a guy like Patrick Corbin, letting him get in a groove, Ben, and retire however many he did, along with the bullpen's help. It was 19 at one point. That doesn't work.
We got Jesse Agler coming up at the bottom of the hour. If you'd like to contribute an incorporator word, you can submit it in our YouTube stream or via our Twitter handle at Ben and Woods. We need a vocabulary word for Jesse for tonight's broadcast when he joins us at 8:35 this morning. And I want to go through, we haven't really done so yet, the roster moves, what they all mean, what the Padres did yesterday, because they made a lot of them coming up on our next segment. But I know you wanted, before we went to break, you had a shout out that you wanted to do here.
Yeah, we need to do a shout-out to his family. Saw the news come over this morning that Shifty Shell... If I told you Shifty Shellshock passed away, would you have any earthly idea?
None.
Zero. Whatsoever.
Never. That's the first time I've ever heard those two words put together in a sentence.
Now, Paulie, do you have the song? The song?
I do.
Okay. What if I played this for you?
Anything?
It's not ringing any bells yet. Come, my lady, come, my lady. Nothing. Nothing.
I don't think so, no. What era are we talking about here?
I mean,
was that like early 2000s?
He passed away at 49 years old, so he's our age, essentially. So our era, the era of us.
Right, but musically, was he...
Our era.
Okay.
He's the same age, so it was our era.
The musical artist.
Yes. He was the singer front man for a band called Crazy Town. Number one song, and it was in 2000, the year 2000, and passed away 49 years old, cause of death unknown. He had struggled a lot with addiction in his life and career. Just a, you know, kind of a one-hit wonder band, but that song was massive. Massive, massive, massive. And he passed away. You know how we do it here on Ben and Woods this morning.
And I really hope we can see more unity and more peace when already things are so difficult. So, shout out to his family.
I ran into Shifty Shellshock in Los Angeles. I was actually...
Just ran into him.
Yep, yeah, literally. Was going to see Jason Isbell play in L.A. and was outside the venue, and he walked by walking his dog, and I...
You recognized him.
Oh, immediately.
Okay.
I mean, the video, you couldn't get away from Butterfly. You just couldn't get away from it. It was everywhere you went. Come, my lady. Come, my lady. And yeah, I did. Roastmaster said, I did not have the CD. I just heard the song on the radio like the rest of you. There's your old pal Woods and Shifty Shellshock, the streets of Los Angeles. Yeah, man, it was. He was a really nice guy, super cool, and 49 years old is way, way too young. way, way too young. So rest in peace. Shout out to your family, Shifty.
I'm sorry that I still don't really know who you are.
I can't believe he's never heard. That song doesn't ring any bells.
Not even. I mean, Crazy Town, the name, Shifty Shell Shock, the song. I just must have missed that year.
I guess they don't play it at sporting venues. So you
apparently
missed
not.
It entirely.
Just missed that
Actually,
year.
I feel like they do. That was the main... I feel like that was the main song for the San Diego Strike Force.
Ooh, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I feel like Burt Grossman told us that because he loved that song.
So he picked it.
Of course he did.
So great. So great.
All right, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, go through some of the interesting roster moves the Padres made yesterday, and then Jesse Agler will join us at the bottom of the hour for the Incorporator. All coming up.
I wonder if he was a big Crazy Town fan. My guess is no.
Jesse's like me.
My guess is a hard
right over
no.
his head.
Yeah.
All coming up next after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. I'll be honest. Yesterday was shaping up as one of the very low points of the 2024 year for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
Had they ended up losing that game, combined with the pretty bad news they got before the game involving multiple players, you would have looked and gone, wow, this is a tough one to swallow for the San Diego Padres. Of course, we mentioned, Fernando Tatis Jr. earlier and going on the injured list with the stress reaction in his right femur. That's the biggest bone in your body. That's the big one under your quad there. And all year long,
Bonesplaining,
yeah. No. All year long, Fernando Tatis Jr. thought he was dealing with a muscular problem, but it turned out it was deeper than that. And finally, they got the imaging a couple of days ago that showed the stress reaction in that leg. And Tatis spoke after the game and said it's really bothered him since Korea and really got bad in the first series at San Francisco, that first couple of weeks of the season. And he's been dealing with it ever since. It's a sharp pain. Recently, it started to radiate. He feels it throughout his entire body, especially when accelerating and decelerating. He can kind of run, but then when he tries to slow up, it just absolutely bites him. Or when he's trying to speed up, it really, the shooting pain comes up through his leg. It was very hard to deal with, and ultimately the decision was made. In order to get it healthy, he's going to have to spend some time not doing all those things that he does when he plays baseball, like flying around, sprinting around the bases, and playing the outfield. So, no Fernando Tatis Jr. And while Mike Schilt was like, well, you know, it's probably more than 10 days, Fernando Tatis was like, no, this is definitely several weeks type recovery, certainly through the All-Star break. And it sounds like even possibly beyond that a little bit, if he really wants to get 100% healthy, which he will. It's something that you will recover from. Doctors say it's not no long-term concerns. He just needs rest, and he'll be fine. But that rest can be anywhere from 6 to sometimes up to 14 weeks to get it completely healthy, which is quite a bit longer than, you know, you got the indication of when the Padres first made the announcement yesterday.
Man, I don't know what to say about it. I mean, I saw the comments yesterday. It doesn't seem like everyone's on the same page. You know, is that safe to say? You know, it just doesn't seem like they're on the same page. I mean, messaging wise,
I assume that Mike Schilt is the one who sets the page. Maybe he doesn't explain to Fernando Tatis, hey, we don't want you to say you're going to be out for more than a few weeks, but he did. So, you know. I mean, it was pretty obvious, even with Schilt's comments, that they picked this now, knowing they only have, 16 more games before the All-Star break, a number of off days, and the All-Star break that, you know, hopefully you miss as few games as possible because you've got, you know, 9 of those days you're not even playing baseball. And you can sit through those 9 days plus the 16 and get at least 4 weeks right there with only missing basically, you know, 2.5 weeks worth of games.
Yeah, the comment he made before the game, Schilt, I mean, he said, the day before we got the absolute diagnosis, he went first to home with some of the most beautiful artistic athletic movements you'll see. He looked like Totti. He looked like Ben or me running the bases that night. Remember that? The ball?
Well, he looked bad. When he slowed down at the end, he looked like he was in agony.
Bro, when
he goes fast, he says he's okay. It's when he's decelerating or accelerating that it's really the hard part. And he can hit. Obviously, he was on fire at the plate.
Yeah.
He can hit, no problem.
Such a bother.
Just the running that is what really causes. So when, you know, Mike Shildt said he could have pinch hit, he can. Like Kirk Gibson, he could have limped, gone up there. He can swing. You just don't want him necessarily then having to run around the bases. Can you do the whole, like, adult league runner,
non-runner,
and yeah, you just have someone sprinting out of the box for him?
You're looking
great.
You're looking at one. No, you can't. They can't sprint out of the box for you. But once you get to the base, you can time non-runner. You walk.
You know, I've seen where they have a line where someone stands there.
They do that at fantasy camp.
You just have someone standing there.
Yeah.
And as soon as he swings the bat, the other person then runs to first base.
Yeah.
Why did we do that?
Because somebody was injured.
Injury.
Yeah, you can't do that in the big
league. Or we had a girl on our team was a paraplegic.
Yeah, she had one leg. So
but she batted, and then someone else ran.
Yeah,
can we not do that for Fernando Tatis Jr.?
It's not allowed.
It's good for the game, though, to keep the stars in the game. They should consider amending the rules to keep them out there as much as possible.
I mean, I'm here for the non-runner rule all day. The last out then has to go run for you. I'm all about it. I think it's great. No team is completely forthright when it comes to injuries. I've kind of gotten used to this. Again, it's one of those things for me, and I'm just speaking for myself. When I see the injury stuff come out, I'm like, all right. I mean, onward and upward. I mean, what are you going to do? What can I do about it? There's nothing I can do. I can't even be mad. I can't, you know, lament it. I can't point fingers. I just go, okay, next man up. You know, we're going to have to figure out a way to win ball games. And luckily, they were able to last night. You wonder how long that luck's going to hold up, though. You know, and
they're going to miss him at some point.
Bro, I mean, yeah.
There's a game where other guys won't come through that he would have come through if he had been there. I mean, that's inevitable.
Anytime you lose, you know, your best player, one of your best players, if not your best player, it's gonna sting a little bit. But it's not impossible. It's not impossible to go out and win baseball games without him. They've done it before. They've done it to great success without Fernando Tatis Jr. before. It's not something I want to get used to, though. So him being out potentially past the All-Star break, that stings a little bit.
Also find out Yu Darvish is not coming back today. We talked about that a little bit earlier. So Adam Mazur is coming back, and we'll get another start.
That was concerning as well.
Of course.
Elbow?
Yeah, elbow inflammation. We'll see. He said he was fine after his last start, but obviously this popped up between the rehab start and now. So no Yu Darvish today. And then Jose Azokar was sent down to AAA as well, according to Mike Shildt, to get some at-bats and work on his game with Bryce Johnson, who played last night. I know very little about Bryce Johnson. He's been in the big leagues before, but very limited experience. And then Eggy is back as well, and they're going to try to work Eggy in the outfield a little bit to try to get his bat in the lineup, especially against left-handers, since he is one of the guys from the right side of the plate who hits lefties well, something the Padres don't do well.
I think you see Eggy today, certainly, against Mackenzie Gore. No question about it. Don't know where he's going to play. DH
possibly,
yeah.
Even.
Jerkson's a decent DH candidate as well. There's again, guys are banged up playing through stuff. So,
and Johnny Brito sent down to work on becoming a starter and stretching out.
That was interesting.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes some sense.
I mean, he's not providing a ton of value as the last guy essentially in the bullpen.
No.
But you need starting depth. And if he can provide some of it, I think that's a more valuable use for Johnny Brito right now. All right, we'll come back. Jesse Agler will join us. He got to call the walk-off last night, voice of the Padres, the Incorporator, all coming up next year with Bennett Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Woods gets up and asks Paulie, how much time we left in the break? As he runs out to the bathroom, and Paul goes, zero.
Zero. We are
that's
literally coming back right now.
We are coming back now. We've got Jesse to talk to. Got to get an Incorporator to get to. If you can't hold it for the entire segment, I don't know what to tell you, Woods.
I don't have a choice at
you
this point.
You can go right now, and we can just just vamp until it's time. But, we're back, and we're getting ready for Jesse Agler. He's going to be with us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. All right, Polly says Jesse's going to call in just one second here. As a play-by-play guy, walk-offs are your chance to have signature moments. You know those are the kind of calls that get replayed into the future. Last year, Jesse had almost no chances to do it. A whole summer long with two walk-offs, the entire year.
It's terrible.
And now, what, Potter's four in the last seven home games.
Yeah.
They've had a walk-off ending. Three straight on home runs, and then, of course, last night in extra innings. There's just been a lot more drama to the baseball season this year. Last year was shockingly at least positive drama-free for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
Shockingly so.
Shockingly.
This year?
Historically, almost.
Yeah. This year, it's been a different story for the San Diego Padres, and there has been moments. There's been several memorable, significant moments, you know, that have placed already, and we're just barely halfway through the season.
Paulie's working on getting Jesse on the line
now.
But people in the chat, he's not going to say Hawk Tua, okay? Like, they're like, I'll donate money to the Peter Seidler Fund. You should do that anyway, number one. He's a professional broadcaster. He's not going to get on the air tonight and incorporate Hawk Tua into the broadcast. He would get in trouble, I think.
We have a great word for him.
We do.
But that's not it. That's actually two words. So
yes, you're right.
That doesn't even work.
It's
two total different words. All right, looks like we've got him now. Let's go out to Jesse Agler, who joins us right now after last night's 7-6, 10-inning victory over the Washington Nationals. Jesse, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. I know the answer to this question. I'm going to ask it anyway. When you were in college, did you ever pull an all-nighter, like studying when you were at University of Miami?
Not studying, no.
No, not studying. Listen to him. Listen to him not studying. What a legend that answer was. Is he coming in okay? We got him?
Jesse, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're cutting out a little bit.
It's not working.
Try it again, Paul.
Jesse,
let
me try calling you back.
Jesse joins us from the worst cell phone reception.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, you know, Orange County a few weeks ago was bad, and now it's bad again today.
Yeah.
It's all right. Why did you think that he did? You think he had or had not done an
all nighter? No, I thought he absolutely had studied, like staying up all night writing a paper. Or
because
studying.
Why?
Well, so because I feel like everybody pulls one or two.
I never did one.
Well, you didn't?
No,
never.
So when you actually do the work and are prepared, you don't have to do an all nighter at any point.
BFD,
you get rest before the exam. You don't have to stay up all night preparing. You feel good. You go to bed at a reasonable hour. That's the way it should be done once.
I mean, I was an English major with four senior-level English classes. I had 20-page papers. Dude, you can't. There's not enough time. Now, I pushed all those till my last year, right? So I had a big load, and I had to manage
class load.
Said load. Yeah. And so sometimes you have to stay up all night writing papers. What I want to ask him, though, so you don't even know. Paulie, you pulled an all-nighter, right?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Do you remember that feeling that you had when you finished your test, your final, turned in your paper, whatever, when you're walking back to your apartment or your car and you're like, you're like in a daze, in a trance. This team feels like it's on one long all-nighter right now for the last week. Like their heads have to be spinning, you know, with all the emotion, with all the grinding that they've done. You can't grind that much and not be exhausted. And that's what I want to ask Jesse Agler about.
Okay. I can see your, at least, comparison there.
Paul, you know what I'm talking about. Remember that feeling?
I was a procrastinator. I would wait until the last minute and
but
just
you know, like,
cram.
You walk outside, the sun's blazing, you have not slept, you turned in you did your final, and you're walking to your car, and you're like, strangely, I feel very alive right now. I feel very alive. Yeah. My emotions are at the skin. You know, I can feel my nerves.
I'll take some Adderall. I'll be done at like 4 a.m. with my paper or whatever, and I'd clean the kitchen.
Clean the kitchen, do a little workout in, do whatever. I know, man.
It's funny because people think that people who don't procrastinate are somehow doing it because they're just very responsible human beings. I don't do it because I hate the feeling of feeling like I'm not going to get something done in time. It's so stressful when I go down to the last minute. I don't ever want to put myself in that situation. I want to always know that if worse comes to worse, I have those last few hours that I have a cushion that I don't need. But if I needed it, it's there. It's always there in reserve. So that's why I don't put things off until the last possible second.
You know what's weird about me is that I'll be 2 hours early for stuff, right? Which is the definition, it's the opposite of procrastination, like psychotically early. But when it comes to, hey, I got a paper due, or I got this test, now I need the pressure sometimes to like make me perform.
See, now I would never want to be 2 hours early. I value efficiency so much.
Right.
And I feel like, okay, I'm not planning my day very well if I get somewhere 2 hours in advance.
We got to, my whole point of that, Jesse, was asking you, you know, when you pull an all-nighter, if you turn in a paper or, you know, do your final, that feeling you had kind of walking to your car where your nerves are exposed and you're like, man, this is nuts, like sleep deprivation. I feel like that's what the Padres are going through right now with all this grinding that they're doing to stay one game over 500. It's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, they are a resilient team, and I think that's been pretty apparent early on. And look, you know, a lot of teams say that, but I think particularly after last year and kind of the way everything went down and how much they struggled in one-run games and extra inning games and all that, it was really important to try and establish that early this season, and they did that. You know, I mean, they came out of the chute with a couple of really big comebacks in April. They had the crazy game against the Dodgers in Seoul where everybody was hitting. And it just kind of felt, you know, coming out of that, like, all right, you know, this is a different team. And I think that was a nice way to sort of, you know, turn the page from last year. Because, and look, as we know, every team is different year to year. Like, the reality is last year, when it comes to that kind of stuff, doesn't matter. And you can back that up with a statistical argument. You know, RISP last year has no bearing on RISP this year. So we all kind of thought, all right, it should be better this year. But to sort of like psychologically get over the hump and be able to have the success that they had earlier this season, and for, I think, Mike Schilt to talk about it as much as he's talked about it and to make a point about it as much as he's made a point about it, really helped, you know, this 2024 team say, all right, last year is last year. We're all about the windshield and not the rearview mirror.
But we also talked earlier about it's kind of a catch-22, that there's nothing you can necessarily do. You have to experience some success to build that positive feeling. And right. Last year's team just never got to experience it. So, of course, they never were able to really build some of those feelings and, you know, good vibes going forward because it just didn't happen for them.
The crazy thing is, last year, end of the year, right, they have like their good run. You know, they win five in a row or whatever at the end of the season. They win an extra inning game in San Francisco, then another one game, 162. And all of us, myself included, kind of wrote that off as like, all right, well, it didn't matter because, you know, they were essentially all but eliminated for most of that run. And they were eliminated for a good chunk of it at the end. So it was kind of like, you know, all right, throw it away. It doesn't really mean anything. And, you know, I made note in spring training a couple of times that last year, this team with Jerkson Profar on the roster at the end of the season went 16-5. And I kind of said it like tongue in cheek during the spring training broadcasts because like, hey, that's kind of cool, right? And there's like a story there, but we all know better. It couldn't have just been because Jurickson Profar showed up. That's not why they won 16 out of their last 21 games last year. But, you know, kind of what you're saying, there is a different vibe. And it's very hard to say he isn't a huge part of that. And look, you're absolutely right. You have to go out and get the hits. You have to get out and do the thing. But, you know, sometimes there are guys, you know, that make a big difference, you know, in tangible and in intangible ways. And it's getting harder and harder to think the Jerkson Profar is not one of the best examples of that when it comes to this Padre team and this Padre clubhouse. And so I'm loving the attention he's getting nationally. I'm loving that he's leading the way in all-star balloting because it is so deserved, you know, from the raw numbers standpoint and what he's produced this year, from the way he's sort of battling through this knee situation to obviously the impact, which I think is gigantic, that he's had on this team.
No question about it. Talking to Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres. You can hear him tonight, 97.3 The Fan, along with Tony Gwynn Jr. I you know, another one is Jackson Merrill being 21 years old. And now, honestly, like he's a leader. And we talked about the message that you're hearing coming out of there. You know, last year's message was essentially, oh, don't worry. We'll get there. We'll be where we need to be. This year's message is, don't mess with us. We're a bunch of effing ballers. They've said it. They've called themselves ballers so many times that I'm like, they actually believe this. And when you watch them play, yeah, man, they have those games where you're like, oh, man, who wants to face these guys? They're just relentless. They don't quit. It's pretty apparent that Jackson Merrill is another one of those guys in that clubhouse at 21, first taste of the big leagues, and now is, you know, a regular that people are like, should we extend him another 12 years? It's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to have extension talks for a lot of like kind of obvious logistical reasons.
Right.
But he's playing his ass off and I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying watching Jackson Merrill, like way more than I expected, you know, just sort of the natural. All right. He's 20 at the beginning of spring training. He turns 21. You know, let's not expect too much. You know, let's hope for the best. But I mean, he's exceeded every expectation I've had in every way. And he is a great kid and he's a dog, as you're talking about, man. He's up on the top railing of the dugout. He's intense. Yep. And I think that whole thing goes to a conversation about roster construction that sometimes gets a little bit put off to the side. Usually when we're talking about roster construction, we're talking left, right. We're talking power, contact. We're talking whatever. But like, there is something I believe when it comes to roster construction that should involve personality.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, kind of having not necessarily just the right mix of guys, because that's a little bit difficult, but a mix of guys who have different kinds of like edges to them. You know, I think everybody understands the way that, you know, a team will sometimes take on the personality of its leadership and how certain guys will, you know, follow other guys. And that can be good and the person and the situation. You know, sometimes you need personality A, sometimes you need personality B, sometimes you need personality Y. And that's the good thing is you've got different sort of like versions of that in the Padre clubhouse. And I'm not suggesting like Jackson Merrill is leading the way at 21 years old, but I tell you what, the energy that he brings, the intensity that he brings, the ability that he brings, it's all contagious and all that stuff matters. And that can get other guys riled up in a good way. He has been a critical piece to the success this team has had. Very similar to Profar, right? With like kind of that, you know, high energy, intensity and attitude. You know, Jerkson always looking to create a chip on his shoulder over something, and it helps him. He's one of those guys, and it is really, really fun to watch. Let me say this about the 2024 team, and I know everybody in town knows this because people have been showing up like crazy. You're not supposed to have 39,000 on a Monday against the Nationals, yep. Okay? Like, it's incredible every single night out there. But this is a very watchable baseball team, not only because of, like, the comebacks and the sort of you feel like they're never out of it thing, but the energy and the excitement that those guys play with. And on top of that, like, they don't strike out anymore. It's remarkable. This is a team that struck out, like every other team, basically, a ton, you know, the last couple of years. And it's like all of a sudden the switch got flipped this season. They're putting the ball in play. They're just a more entertaining team to observe than they've been, really, I think, at any time since I've been here, which is saying something because there's been some cool teams. But this year's team is so fun to watch. And they're just kind of doing it a little bit differently than so many of the other really good teams.
Top batting average in baseball. They'll lead the league in bunt hits as well. And they hit home runs, so they can do it in lots of different ways. It is entertaining. You're absolutely right, Jesse. You mentioned Jurickson's, you know, motivation and the near hit by pitch, the intentional walk to put him up. And he talked about it after the game. Now, do you expect any fireworks tonight after what you were kind of hearing from the Washington Nationals?
Yes.
Washington Nationals in the dugout at the end of the game.
Wow, that was an all-timer.
You okay over there?
We don't know.
I haven't quite been the same since our golf tournament last week.
He's dying.
How'd you play?
We didn't play at all.
We didn't. We just entertained.
Okay. Yeah, entire
shaking
day.
Hands, yeah. Kissing babies, buddy.
That's nice. Congrats. Good job.
Thank you.
Was there a question there?
Well, yeah, does he expect any fireworks tonight?
Ooh,
no,
I love fireworks.
You know, I mean, like, no. I mean, you never know. But, I mean, McKenzie is fiery. You know, remember that. He tried to fight his third baseman in the dugout a couple weeks ago. He's on the mound for the Nats. So he definitely has at times, and he's admitted to this, you know, kind of let his emotions, you know, get to him. But he's a pro. Like, I don't know. I mean, what are you guys expecting? Like, what am I missing here?
I don't know. I mean, the way the Nationals TV broadcasters were describing the reaction from guys like Jesse Winker and Keibert Ruiz, they were really unhappy with Jurickson's celebration after the game.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I think we're at the point in baseball now where, you know, you get a walk-off win, you got to expect all kinds of craziness. And if the guy gets knocked on his backside, you know, what is it, two pitches before the game-winning hit, you know, he's probably going to be a little bit fired up in that moment. You never know in baseball. I don't have a great sense of like how the Nats handle stuff. We haven't seen them since last summer. So, you know, maybe that is kind of the way they like to go about business. But I wouldn't think, you know, there's a reason for it. Look, they're a team like the Padres who are, you know, very much in this, you know, early season playoff conversation. If I'm the Washington Nationals, I'm not trying to get caught up in something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to win another game or two here because all of these games against these teams that could be in the wild card match, really important. Remember tiebreakers now, head to head. So the three games that they're playing here, the three games that they'll play in Washington after the All-Star break, you know, could be if the Nats hang around the playoff picture all summer long, you know, those could end up being like critically important games for both of these teams. So that's my perspective. It would be like, hey, you gotta, you know, worry about trying to win a game, not, you know, being upset that somebody was happy that they won one.
We got a little behind on the technical difficulties. So let's get quickly to the incorporator word for today. Paulie's got it for you here, Jesse.
Bivouac. Bivouac.
You probably heard that before, right?
Woods gets up and asks Paulie, how much time we left in the break? As he runs out to the bathroom, and Paul goes, zero.
Zero. We are That's literally coming back right now.
We are coming back now. We've got Jesse to talk to. Got to get an incorporator to get to. If you can't hold it for the entire segment, I don't know what to tell you, Woods.
I don't have a choice at
you
this point.
You can go right now, and we can just just vamp until it's time. But, we're back, and we're getting ready for Jesse Agler. He's going to be with us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Paulie says Jesse's going to call in just 1 second here. As a play-by-play guy, walk-offs are your chance to have signature moments. You know those are the kind of calls that get replayed into the future. Last year, Jesse had almost no chances to do it. A whole summer long with two walk-offs. The entire year.
It's terrible.
And now, what, Potter's 4 in the last 7 home games.
Yeah.
They've had a walk-off ending. 3 on home runs, 3 straight on home runs, and then, of course, last night in extra innings. There's just been a lot more drama to the baseball season this year. Last year was shockingly, at least positive drama-free for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
Shockingly. This year?
Historically, almost. Yeah.
This year, it's been a different story for the San Diego Padres, and there has been moments. There's been several memorable, significant moments, that have placed already, and we're just barely halfway through the season.
Paulie's working on getting Jesse on the line
now.
But people in the chat, he's not going to say Hawk Tua, okay? Like, they're like, I'll donate money to the Peter Seidler Fund. You should do that anyway, number one. He's a professional broadcaster. He's not going to get on the air tonight and incorporate Hawk Tua into the broadcast. He would get in trouble, I think.
We have a great word for him.
We do.
But that's not it. That's actually two words. So
yes, you're right.
That doesn't even work.
It's a phrase.
Two total different words. All right. Looks like we've got him now. Let's go out to Jesse Agler, who joins us right now after last night's 7-6, 10-inning victory over the Washington Nationals. Jesse, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. I know the answer to this question. I'm going to ask it anyway. When you were in college, did you ever pull an all-nighter, like studying when you were at University of Miami?
Not studying, no.
No, not studying. Listen to him. Listen to him not studying. What a legend that answer was. Is he coming in okay? We got him?
Jesse, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're cutting out a little bit.
It's not working.
Try it again, Paul.
Jesse,
let me try calling you back.
Jesse joins us from the worst cell phone reception.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, you know, Orange County a few weeks ago was bad, and now it's bad again today.
Yeah.
It's all right. Why did you think that he had or had not done an
all-nighter? No, I thought he absolutely had studied, like staying up all night writing a paper.
Why?
Well, so because I feel like everybody pulls one or two.
I never did one.
Well, you didn't?
No.
Never.
So when you actually do the work and are prepared, you don't have to do an all-nighter at any point.
BFD,
you get rest before the exam. You don't have to stay up all night preparing. You feel good. You go to bed at a reasonable hour. That's the way it should be done once.
I mean, I was an English major with 4 senior-level English classes. I had 20-page papers. Dude, you can't. There's not enough time. Now, I pushed all those till my last year, right? So I had a big load. And I had to manage
said load.
Yeah. And so sometimes you have to stay up all night writing papers. What I want to ask him, though, so you don't even know. Paulie, you pulled an all-nighter, right?
All the time.
Do you remember that feeling that you had when you finished your test, your final, turned in your paper, whatever, when you're walking back to your apartment or your car and you're like, you're like in a daze, in a trance? This team feels like it's on one long all-nighter right now for the last week. Like their heads have to be spinning, you know, with all the emotion, with all the grinding that they've done. You can't grind that much and not be exhausted. And that's what I want to ask Jesse Agler about.
Okay. I can see your, at least, comparison there.
Paul, you know what I'm talking. Remember that feeling?
I was a procrastinator. I would wait until the last minute and
but
just
you know, like,
cram.
You walk outside, the sun's blazing, you have not slept, you turned in you did your final, and you're walking to your car, and you're like, strangely, I feel very alive right now. I feel very alive. Yeah. My emotions are at the skin. You know, I can feel my nerves.
I'll take some Adderall. I'll be done at like 4 a.m. with my paper or whatever, and I'd clean the kitchen.
Clean the kitchen, do a little workout in, do whatever. I know, man.
It's funny because people think that people who don't procrastinate are somehow doing it because they're just very responsible human beings. I don't do it because I hate the feeling of feeling like I'm not going to get something done in time. It's so stressful when I go down to the last minute. I don't ever want to put myself in that situation. I want to always know that if worse comes to worse, I have those last few hours that I have a cushion that I don't need, but if I needed it, it's there. It's always there in reserve. So that's why I don't put things off until the last possible second.
You know what's weird about me is that I'll be 2 hours early for stuff, right? Which is the definition. It's the opposite of procrastination, like psychotically early. But when it comes to, hey, I got a paper due, or I got this test, now I need the pressure sometimes to like make me perform.
See, now I would never want to be 2 hours early. I value efficiency so much.
Right.
And I feel like, okay, I'm not planning my day very well if I get somewhere 2 hours in advance.
We got to, my whole point of that, Jesse, was asking you, you know, when you pull an all-nighter, if you turn in a paper or, you know, do your final, that feeling you had kind of walking to your car where your nerves are exposed and you're like, man, this is nuts, like sleep deprivation. I feel like that's what the Padres are going through right now with all this grinding that they're doing to stay one game over 500. It's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, they are a resilient team, and I think that's been pretty apparent early on. And look, you know, a lot of teams say that, but I think particularly after last year and kind of the way everything went down and how much they struggled in one-run games and extra inning games and all that, it was really important to try and establish that early this season. And they did that. You know, I mean, they came out of the chute with a couple of really big comebacks in April. They had the crazy game against the Dodgers in Seoul where everybody was hitting. And it just kind of felt, you know, coming out of that, like, all right, you know, this is a different team. And I think that was a nice way to sort of, you know, turn the page from last year. Because, and look, as we know, every team is different year to year. Like, the reality is last year, when it comes to that kind of stuff, doesn't matter. And you can back that up with a statistical argument. You know, RISP last year has no bearing on RISP this year. So we all kind of thought, all right, it should be better this year. But to sort of like psychologically get over the hump and be able to have the success that they had earlier this season, and for, I think, Mike Schilt to talk about it as much as he's talked about it and to make a point about it as much as he's made a point about it, really helped, you know, this 2024 team say, all right, last year is last year. We're all about the windshield and not the rearview mirror.
But we also talked earlier about it's kind of a catch-22, that there's nothing you can necessarily do. You have to experience some success to build that positive feeling. And last year's team just never got to experience it. So, of course, they never were able to really build some of those feelings and, you know, good vibes going forward because it just didn't happen for them.
The crazy thing is, last year, end of the year, right, they have like their good run. You know, they win five in a row or whatever at the end of the season. They win an extra inning game in San Francisco, then another one game, 162. And all of us, myself included, kind of wrote that off as like, all right, well, it didn't matter because, you know, they were essentially all but eliminated for most of that run. And they were eliminated for a good chunk of it at the end. So it was kind of like, you know, all right, throw it away. It doesn't really mean anything. And, you know, I made note in spring training a couple of times that last year, this team with Jerks and Profar on the roster at the end of the season went 16-5. And I kind of said it like tongue in cheek during the spring training broadcasts because like, hey, that's kind of cool, right? And there's like a story there, but we all know better. It couldn't have just been because Jurickson and Profar showed up. That's not why they won 16 out of their last 21 games last year. But, you know, kind of what you're saying, there is a different vibe. And it's very hard to say he isn't a huge part of that. And look, you're absolutely right. You have to go out and get the hits. You have to get out and do the thing. But, you know, sometimes there are guys, you know, that make a big difference, you know, in tangible and in intangible ways. And it's getting harder and harder to think the Jerks and Profar is not one of the best examples of that when it comes to this Padre team and this Padre clubhouse. And so I'm loving the attention he's getting nationally. I'm loving that he's leading the way in all-star balloting because it is so deserved, you know, from the raw numbers standpoint and what he's produced this year, from the way he's sort of battling through this knee situation to obviously the impact, which I think is gigantic, that he's had on this team.
No question about it. Talking to Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres. You can hear him tonight, 97.3 The Fan, along with Tony Gwynn Jr. I another one is Jackson Merrill being 21 years old. And now, honestly, like he's a leader. And we talked about the message that you're hearing coming out of there. You know, last year's message was essentially, oh, don't worry, don't worry. We'll get there. We'll be where we need to be. This year's message is, don't mess with us. We're a bunch of effing ballers. They've said it. They've called themselves ballers so many times that I'm like, they actually believe this. And when you watch them play, yeah, man, they have those games where you're like, oh man, who wants to face these guys? They're just relentless. They don't quit. It's pretty apparent that Jackson Merrill is another one of those guys in that clubhouse at 21, first taste of the big leagues, and now is, you know, a regular that people are like, should we extend him another 12 years? It's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to have extension talks for a lot of like kind of obvious logistical reasons.
Right.
But he's playing his ass off, and I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying watching Jackson Merrill, like way more than I expected. You know, just sort of the natural. All right, he's 20 at the beginning of spring training. He turns 21. You know, let's not expect too much. You know, let's hope for the best. But I mean, he's exceeded every expectation I've had in every way. And he is a great kid, and he's a dog, as you're talking about, man. He's up on the top railing of the dugout. He's intense. Yep. And I think that whole thing goes to a conversation about roster construction that sometimes gets a little bit put off to the side. Usually when we're talking about roster construction, we're talking left, right. We're talking power, contact. We're talking whatever. But like, there is something I believe when it comes to roster construction that should involve personality.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, kind of having not necessarily just the right mix of guys, because that's a little bit difficult, but a mix of guys who have different kinds of like edges to them. You know, I think everybody understands the way that, you know, a team will sometimes take on the personality of its leadership and how certain guys will, you know, follow other guys. And that can be good and the person and the situation. You know, sometimes you need personality A, sometimes you need personality B, sometimes you need personality Y. And that's the good thing is you've got different sort of like versions of that in the Padre clubhouse. And I'm not suggesting like Jackson Merrill is leading the way at 21 years old, but I tell you what, the energy that he brings, the intensity that he brings, the ability that he brings, it's all contagious and all that stuff matters. And that can get other guys riled up in a good way. He has been a critical piece to the success this team has had. Very similar to Profar, right? With like kind of that, you know, high energy, intensity and attitude, you know, Jerkson always looking to create a chip on his shoulder over something, and it helps him. He's one of those guys, and it is really, really fun to watch. Let me say this about the 2024 team. And I know everybody in town knows this because people have been showing up like crazy. You're not supposed to have 39,000 on a Monday against the Nationals, yep. Okay? Like, it's incredible every single night out there. But this is a very watchable baseball team, not only because of, like, the comebacks and the sort of you feel like they're never out of it thing, but the energy and the excitement that those guys play with. And on top of that, like, they don't strike out anymore. It's remarkable. This is a team that struck out, like every other team, basically, a ton, you know, the last couple of years. And it's like all of a sudden the switch got flipped this season. They're putting the ball in play. They're just a more entertaining team to observe than they've been, really, I think, at any time since I've been here, which is saying something because there's been some cool teams. But this year's team is so fun to watch. And they're just kind of doing it a little bit differently than so many of the other really good teams.
Top batting average in baseball. They'll lead the league in bunt hits as well. And they hit home runs, so they can do it in lots of different ways. It is entertaining. You're absolutely right, Jesse. You mentioned Jurickson's, you know, motivation and the near hit by pitch, the intentional walk to put him up. And he talked about it after the game. Now, do you expect any fireworks tonight after what you were kind of hearing from the Washington Nationals?
Yes.
Washington Nationals in the dugout at the end of the game.
Wow. That was an all-timer.
You okay over there?
We don't know.
I haven't quite been the same since our golf tournament last week.
He's dying.
How'd you play?
We didn't play at all.
We didn't. We just entertained. Shaking hands, kissing babies, buddy.
That's nice. Congrats. Good job.
Thank you.
Was there a question there?
Does he expect any fireworks tonight?
Ooh, no. I love fireworks.
You know, I mean, like, no. I mean, you never know. But, I mean, McKenzie is fiery. You know, remember that. He tried to fight his third baseman in the dugout a couple weeks ago. He's on the mound for the Nats. So he definitely has at times, and he's admitted to this, you know, kind of let his emotions, you know, get to him. But he's a pro. Like, I don't know. I mean, what are you guys expecting? Like, what am I missing here?
I don't know. I mean, the way the Nationals TV broadcasters were describing the reaction from guys like Jesse Winker and Keibert Ruiz, they were really unhappy with Jurickson's celebration after the game.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. That you, like, I think we're at the point in baseball now where, you know, you get a walk-off win, you got to expect all kinds of craziness. And if the guy gets knocked on his backside, you know, what is it, two pitches before the game-winning hit, you know, he's probably going to be a little bit fired up in that moment. You never know in baseball. I don't have a great sense of, like, how the Nats handle stuff. We haven't seen them since last summer. So, you know, maybe that is kind of the way they like to go about business. But I wouldn't think, you know, there's a reason for it. Look, they're a team like the Padres who are, you know, very much in this, you know, early season playoff conversation. If I'm the Washington Nationals, I'm not trying to get caught up in something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to win another game or two here because all of these games against these teams that could be in the wild card match, really important. Remember tiebreakers now, head to head. So the three games that they're playing here, the three games that they'll play in Washington after the All-Star break, you know, could be, if the Nats hang around the playoff picture all summer long, you know, those could end up being like critically important games for both of these teams. So that's my perspective. It would be like, hey, you gotta, you know, worry about trying to win a game, not, you know, being upset that somebody was happy that they won one.
We got a little behind on the technical difficulties. So let's get quickly to the Incorporator word for today. Paulie's got it for you here, Jesse.
Bivouac.
Bivouac. You probably heard that before, right?
Oh, yeah, every day.
Yeah,
every day. Easy one for you.
Bivouac is a temporary encampment without tents or cover used by usually soldiers or mountaineers. A bivouac.
Sure, yeah.
A bivouac. You've got a lot of temporary shelters out on a baseball field. That should be no problem for you tonight. Jesse, good luck with that.
I've got one in my head, and yeah, we'll see what we can do.
All right. Thanks, buddy. There you go. Listen tonight, 6:40 first pitch with Tony Gwynn Jr., 5:40 EcoWater SoCal pregame show. Thank you, Jesse.
Hi, guys.
Jesse Agler. Now, we got him nice and clear by the end there. Let's remember whatever that took to get him sounding that good in our Incorporator segment.
What happened to you?
I have no idea.
Can't wait
no
to
idea. It felt like I had some nut skin, but I haven't eaten any nuts. In my throat. Final report coming up next.